Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of November 29th, 2018. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good, good. And we're also joined by educator, climate hawk, and wonderful podcast producer, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, good. So if you did not get a chance to listen to Mariah's conversation with Jenny Kendler, an artist with installations out in Storm King Mountain, Mariah, it was a great show. You should listen
in. Storm King Art Center.
Very good stuff. And I'm sure that if you've listened to these shows, you can tell the difference between Mariah's production and my production. It's much classier when Mariah does it. So anyway, this I'm glad to have you both here. This is now the week after Thanksgiving. On last Friday, Black Friday, the big shopping day of the year, the administration tried to sneak out a report of something called the National Climate Assessment. And we have lots and lots to say about that. But this is another report about climate. It's a confusing situation because we keep getting these what are called blockbuster reports that are warning us all that the end is near. This particular one is different in that it is commissioned by the United States about the United States and requires, it has input from 13 or 14 federal agencies to assess the impact of climate change on the United States. This is distinct from the other set of big reports that typically come from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, and they drop big reports. IPCC dropped a big report a couple months ago, right, that said we all have to get on the train before 2030 or something. And now, 2 months later, we have this U.S. National Climate Assessment, and it's a big deal. And it is, again, another one in the long line of documents proving that climate change is a bad deal. So let me ask either of you two guys, did you guys see the report? What's your initial reaction to this National Climate Assessment? DR, let me put you on the spot first.
Well, I didn't have a chance to read all the 1,600 pages of the report.
I admit, we should all say none of us has read the 1,600 pages. Yes, please.
But the summary is quite disturbing, as you might imagine. Inside Climate News notes that according to the report, it's showing that human caused climate change is, quote, intensifying and increasing the frequency of extreme rainstorms, putting people and economies at risks, increasing the drying of land and vegetation, harming U.S. forests, and putting water supplies and water quality at risk. And I believe that there's an aspect of the report, if I recall correctly, that basically shows that it's going to inflict severe damage on the GDP of the United States and potentially could, you know, cause an economic slowdown. It's very interesting that this comes years and years after Tom Hartman has the radio host Tom Hartman is, mm-hmm. has often warned about the possibility of extreme weather events and climate change causing another 2008 style financial crisis.
Right.
So
right.
This report sort of signals what Hartman has been warning about for years.
And you know, can I jump in just that the other thing, of course, it talks about is that this is the fourth hottest year on record, and you know, 2016, 2015, 2017 are the top, you know, warmest years. And I read an article in the Washington Post by Max Boot, who says he used to be a climate denier and, of course, has since reformed his ways. And he said if these figures reflected a rise in terrorism or illegal immigration, Republicans would be freaking out. But they're oddly blasé about this climate code red. So I think that's a really interesting point that you've got all of this. It's hitting the GDP. It's causing hot years. It's causing all of these, you know, problems. And it's true. If this was some different sort of topic, it would be alarming to Republicans. Yeah. And yet, you know, they buried it and said, you know, what did Trump say? Is there climate change? Sure, but it'll go back. I mean, look, it's cold out right now. Where's this global warming stuff?
You know? I think the report's quite diffuse, and there are 16 sort of paragraph-long commentaries, but I think that rather than march through all those, the take I got on it, a woman named Catherine Hayhoe, right, you know, you follow her on Twitter, but she's
yeah,
basically
she's
saying that it's happening now, right? So the one big message from the report is that it's not something that's going to be in the future, that we see these effects in the here and now, and we're being damaged in the here and now, that the most vulnerable communities are going to get hit the worst and the first and the worst, which of course has all been said before, but here's the federal government saying it. And I think one relatively new aspect that I took out of this fourth national climate assessment is the idea that we need to start thinking about the interconnectedness of the different cycles. That is to say, the high temperature causes drought, the water cycle causes you know, other problems, telecommute. I mean, we talked on the show a few weeks ago, when the sea levels rise, it's going to take out all of the fiber optics cables up and down the East Coast, right? So there's this interaction, this synergy between the different kind of threats. They're not separate and unconnected. They tend to multiply. And that is something that we haven't really emphasized very much, I think, in the United States, to see these things as interactive. And that's a new avenue that I saw in this report. So it's... So there you go. I mean, and I guess the other thing is you can kind of see that same psychology of the interconnectedness of things in the report on New England, which I looked, I've got it somewhere with all the things on the table, Northeast and New England. But they're basically saying that in the Northeast, we're going to get more rain, right? We're not going to dry out, and that all that extra rain is going to stress the infrastructure, which in the Northeast is the oldest in the country. And we're going to have, you know, terrible infrastructure problems with the sewage and the water and all kinds of stuff, and those are interactive events, right?
Yeah.
I think that, and, go ahead, dear.
I was saying, you know, we think of especially in the Northeast. I mean, we just remember, you know, I remember, you know, 6 years ago how we basically got a touch of Superstorm Sandy, and that led to sort of severe power outages and severe flooding, to say nothing of what, you know, New York and New Jersey got hit with.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine potentially that happening every year or every couple of years, and you can imagine what it will do to the infrastructure of the Northeast, you know, and that goes back to the point that's being made about the economic havoc. Because, you know, we saw the economic havoc that was wrought by Superstorm Sandy. Imagine more of that. And it's sort of baked into the cake, it seems, now.
Well, tell me this, Mariah. Let me put this to you. I mean, a lot of the headlines led with this idea that in the year 2100, we will have a 10% decrease in the GDP, right? That this was the economic consequence. It was going to be like, I guess, like a 2008 recession every year, yada, yada, yada. Question I have is, do you think that casting this thing in terms of reduction in the GDP in the year 2100, doesn't that step over all of the human suffering and all of the damage that's going to happen in the interim? I mean, is talking about the GDP 100 years from now, is that the right way to show the most threatening aspect of this report?
That is so right. I mean, I think that's I've heard from both sides. I've heard, in some ways, talking about it in GDP is the way you get a lot of people to listen, right? I mean, I don't know that I agree with that, but that is sort of probably why they use that kind of an approach. And it's also, it's the standardization measure that means a lot that people can understand. It normalizes things for people.
Right.
I don't think it's a good... You know, in fact, I actually was listening to a podcast by the Next Systems Project where they talked about the importance, even in the sustainability movement. A lot of people will say, well, sustainability is about reducing inefficiency and reducing pollution and finding ways to, you know, win-wins to help, you know, save money. And I talk about that a lot in my classes that I teach, too, of course. And they were really saying that's not really what we should be. That shouldn't be our goal, to save money. There is a moral imperative to climate change, and the human suffering involved is certainly part of that, as is the fact that we have to have our planet. We have to have resources, right? I mean, you know, we can't, like, it goes back to what we've talked about several times, the circular economy. We can't just continually rely on endless growth
right.
and continually producing more and getting bigger, and you know, these big companies that just want to sell to meet their shareholders.
It's a loser's game ultimately.
Yeah,
right? You just can't
exactly.
keep growing. No, I agree with you. I mean, it's a strange way to pose the consequence, but it is one that people understand, right? They hear GDP
right.
and they flash, right? I mean,
right.
do you think there's a better way, DR? Do you think it's a better way to talk? There is a better way to. I mean, if you put away the 10% of GDP loss in the year 2100, how else would you talk about this report?
Good question. I'm cynical enough to believe that were it not for the portion mentioning the GDP and mentioning the economic slowdown, it would not have received as much coverage as it received. I think back to the coverage of the Risky Business Project, if you remember that report prepared by Tom Steyer, Michael Bloomberg, and I believe Henry Paulson, discussing in 2014, discussing the economic impact of climate change and how, if you think about it, the only real reason it got as much coverage as it did was because it was all three individuals talking specifically about the economic impact.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, when you think of, you know, business reporters and what have you, that may, you know, again, to go back to the Gina McCarthy argument that she's made over and over again, you know, people don't relate to polar bears.
Right.
People can relate to an economic crash, but they can't relate to polar bears. So that's probably why it received as much coverage as it did, precisely because of the prospect being raised of an economic slowdown caused by extreme weather.
People feel it.
So as a little bit of a pivot, this is, you know, as you mentioned, the National Climate Assessment is different than the IPCC. The IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change annual report, is a different beast, but addresses things, of course, in a similar with the same idea. One of the things they've included in the most recent IPCC report was these things called shared socioeconomic pathways, or SSPs. Have you guys heard about this?
No. Please tell me.
So it's instead of the former scenarios that they had, I think instead they've turned to these SSPs, these shared socioeconomic pathways, which really look a lot more at sustainability, equity, education, and healthcare, and technological progress, all of these things in combination with sort of climate change and renewable energy. And they present, there's five of these scenarios that they have in this current report. And I think the next one will have nine of these. And so they're shades of what could be, right? So the first one is called, the SSP1 is called sustainability, which is the one that we want. It's a world where policies favor sustainability and equity and education and healthcare. And it as well includes major cuts to fossil fuel investment. But then you have SSP3, which is called regional rivalry, which is low technological progress, few advances in health and education, and booming population, high energy use. And then it gets worse, right? They have an SSP4, which is inequality, and an SSP5, which is fossil fuel development. So they've given these scenarios that do a much better job of taking into account what this will look like for human costs, the real actual human impact, instead of, I think the former reports were more sort of, this is how much the seas are going to rise, and this is what the temperature will look like. I mean, of course, they cover everything,
But I mean, you sound like these are more scenarios kind of playing out a bunch of factors at once, right? One world where the fossil fuel industry dominates and we go for every piece of fossil fuel we can is the worst case scenario, right? And then there's this, you can imagine a world, I think you just mentioned, sort of where there's like, we revert to city states that are rivals, right? The different parts of the world are split up and don't communicate with each other very well, right? How does the future play out in those things, right?
Right. It's much more focused on sort of policy decisions and how those are going to affect the extreme weather versus sort of the prior reports that were.
So do you think that the National Climate Assessment should adopt those? I mean, do you think that's a better way to talk about what the future might be?
I mean, I think there's no question that we need visions.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need facts, because facts are not doing us any good, right? So I think we definitely need visions, and this is maybe a first step towards visions. And I'm not, I didn't, like, SDR has said as well. I did not read those 1,600 pages of the report. So maybe it does have a lot of visions in that report. I don't know. But, you know, I think what's being covered in the media is how apocalyptic it's going to be, right, and right. how dangerous and how awful and everything else. And I think one report I read is that the only person who's covered it not in those terms is Dave Roberts from Vox, who always seems to do a nice job. So
well, I was going to mention that I listened to the Pod Save America podcast for this week, and they had Dave Roberts on it for the interview, and I would highly recommend listening to that podcast because he did a very good job of just talking about all of these issues in one place. Very smart guy. But when you talk about publishing things, DR, let me look back at you. This is your favorite kind of topic. What do you make of this release of the report on at 2 o'clock on the Friday afternoon after Thanksgiving? Did it work for the administration to bury it? Did this thing did it backfire on them? What do you think?
Well, it was a transparent attempt to try to bury the story by putting it out on what's perceived to be a slow news day. But I think it backfired very, 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 very much for the Trump administration, because by virtue of the fact that it was a slow news day, it got a tremendous amount of coverage over this past weekend, including, surprisingly, even ABC News did a couple of segments on it. And that was eyebrow raising, because ABC News, according to Media Matters, seems to go out of its way not to cover these sorts of stories. Uh-huh. The only downside, as Media Matters also pointed out, is that on the Sunday morning news shows, there were no scientists. There were, you know, this legion of deniosaurs spewing their usual denialist talking points. And in what was, I found, the most disturbing, Chuck Todd had Tom Steyer on as his guest, and Chuck Todd asked zero questions of Steyer about this report. Now, this issue is as much Steyer's calling card as it is Al Gore's.
Right. Yeah.
And yet they didn't ask Tom Steyer question.
Why didn't he bring it up? I'm shocked he didn't just bring it up.
I think Steyer, my guess is that Steyer may have expected Chuck Todd to at least ask one question about it. And then Chuck, you know, basically decided not to. And Michael Mann was on Brad Friedman's broadcast the weekend after the report came out, and he pointed out that there's still a lot of Americans who watch those Sunday morning news shows, mm-hmm. and when this issue is not covered, they are basically deprived of facts. When you bring on dinosaurs and don't bring on scientists and don't bring on people who recognize the facts and don't ask questions of people who recognize the facts, it creates this sort of skewed perspective of people who get their news from the Sunday morning news shows.
Well, it's interesting. One of the movements or the sort of website kind of actions I've seen is something called the hashtag End Climate Science, End Climate Silence, which is trying to improve the coverage of climate change in media. And I saw the spokeswoman basically making the case that we as climate activists should not be demanding blockbuster reports from the news media on climate change, that really what we want is for at least the media to acknowledge the existence of climate change and the influence on every event. Right. So when there's a forest fire, you don't talk about the forest fire necessarily in climate change terms, but you say, oh, yeah, this is related to climate change. Right. A couple of sentences, and that steady drumbeat of truth would eventually sink in even better than having big, 5 minute long coverages that talk all about climate change, which are then over. Mariah, do you think that's a better way to talk about stuff?
Absolutely. I mean, I think DR and I were, it wouldn't, in our podcast, the 21st century, or New Deal for the 21st century, or something like that, we talked about the importance of, it was the California Wildfires podcast. We talked about the importance of how, when these things happen, we should be talking about the relation to climate change. And we, you know, DR, I think you had mentioned something like being hopeful that after these wildfires and things like that, that we'd see some turns in the voting. And I feel like because they're not, it's not, that drumbeat isn't happening, people don't relate them to these natural disasters as much as they should. Mm-hmm. So I absolutely agree. I think that drumbeat is critical. I think the media is really shortchanging us for not doing that drumbeat as regularly as they should be, because they're afraid of the backlash from people saying, oh, it's too soon after this tragedy to talk about, to politicize it and to talk about climate change. And you're thinking, well, why would it be too soon after a tragedy to talk about prevention? Like, at work, when you have something that goes wrong, you do a CAPA, corrective action and preventive, right? I mean, that's not always true, but you know, you immediately try to figure out the root cause of the problem and solve it so it doesn't happen again. So why wouldn't we do the same thing for something as devastating as a wildfire that killed, what is it, 90 people at this point? Why wouldn't we immediately try to figure out why it happened and figure out how to stop it? And one of those root causes is climate change. So it's not politicizing it. It's addressing the root causes of a devastating problem. And it should be a drumbeat.
Well, all right. We're going to put it down there. If I see the clock, I mean, you got the last word. We're almost 22 minutes into this, so we have to let our dear listeners go back to useful activities. Let me just say that we will put up links to some of the stuff we talked about at the blog. Is it massclimateaction.org/blog? You can find the link to the show on our Facebook page at /massclimateaction. You can listen to us on almost all of the modern podcast distribution channels. We'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks for being here, DR.
Thanks.
All right, thank you for the last word. I'm glad you had it.
Thanks,
everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.